I want my 5280 gig now!
From the 5280 Studios, Weekend Geek Update, Artist Spotlight, Smurf here, and I'm sitting down with the boys from MF Ruckus. Now, you're a clever individual, and I don't think I need to explain to you what MF stands for, but Aaron
Mother
and
Friendly. Missing Aaron, follicles, apparently.
Aaron and Jake are going to be here to tell us all about the ruckus, all about what's going on, and their appearance, and what their role is going to be at Dink coming up this weekend.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I mean, and just to be clear, Jake's not in the band. I just brought him along because I was lonely.
Well, you know what? Jake's been on before. He's an incredible traveling companion.
Yeah.
Doctor Who's been pushing to get him on, but you know, he's got too much shit going on. Because as I understand it, I ran into Jake not that long ago when Dink was doing their special. They did like this Christmas art swap thing, which was great. You were there. And what did you end up walking away with from?
It was a large swath of people from the Denver comic book community. And it was kind of like, bring some illustrations, take some illustrations home if you want to. I got a page from a book that Kevin Caron was working on that had some butcher. It was actually funny. He was like, he like spotted me from across the room. It was like, Jake, dude, man, I got this page. Like, this is for you, man. I was like, I'm glad that this horrifying violence that you drew has made me think of you.
Yeah, right.
You weren't even spiked up that night. I mean, you were. You
oh, that's true. I thought you meant on drugs or something.
No, I was doing drugs.
Let me tell you.
Well, when I hear spiked up, I assume intravenous drugs, though.
You may be into drugs.
I'm guessing.
He left the bag at home. You know, it was fine.
Yeah. But I don't think you're into spiky drugs, as far as I know.
It's the prickly kind.
Because we talked about it on the last podcast, but you are an illustrator, and you have gone to the next level. You have a book now. You have everything, because you let me read and your
books.
Yeah,
yes, because the books you gave me were amazing. I never got to follow up with you because, you know, life, music, and the way of art got in the way of it. But is it continuing the stories that you showed me, or is it something new, or what's going on?
This is heavy metal. I haven't been working on as much since I started working on Frontlines of Good Times, which is the MF Ruckus comic book.
Mm-hmm.
The official motherfucking Ruckus comic book.
Yeah.
But, you know, at some point that book is going to get done. But like anything in making comics, it takes a lot.
Resources.
It takes
extensive
time.
Resources.
Time, motivation.
Time is what you have to have if you want to
And unfortunately,
comics.
Money. That does happen.
Yeah.
Well, I know one of the artists that I interviewed, Matt Haley, he's all like, you know what, unfortunately, my wife isn't independently wealthy, and I have to make money. So all the projects that pay, I'm all about.
Yeah.
Well, when Jake and I first teamed up, and he told me, he's like, I quit my job to work on this full time. I was like, whoa, wait a minute.
Well, it should be noted, my job was shitty.
Just and, so you know, you're going
to quit it anyways.
You're going to be getting paid like sweatshop laborers are going to look down on you as like a poor person.
Yeah, they're gonna be like, damn.
You know, at the time, I was
they're
like,
gonna
what?
They're
like,
gonna donate 10% of their income to like try and help a Jake in need.
That's right.
You know, anytime you
Christina Aguilera is gonna sing a song for you, and
yeah.
some money.
If I could get that
is that Sarah McLachlan?
I would feel a lot better. Yeah,
I didn't want to go that because right away
dogs?
I think of the dog. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As soon as they say, I'm like, oh, the poor puppies.
Yeah, but, you know, making a regular, getting paid regularly to make comic books, especially indie comic books,
is a dream.
It's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing that I think is really cool now is we have, like, we use Patreon.
Okay.
And Patreon, I know there are mixed feelings across the with regard to the platform. I know in the music world, it's particularly frowned upon. Like, there's been in recent years, there's been this kind of backlash of like. In the underground music world, where it's like, if you want to get paid, play shows and work hard and you know, you'll get your gruel and you like it. There's kind of that attitude with it. It's like,
but that's an actually archaic way of thinking.
I mean, agree 100%.
That I mean, I'm not opposed to going out, hitting the pavement, doing the rounds, hitting Herman's, doing, you know, all of the downtown shows, the Paramount and whatever nonsense is going on down there, reaching out to Maris the Great and having him kill you in his pool. I mean, whatever, you know, the coolest thing is, but be smart about
it. You're making a lot of dated references here. Maris the Great and Herman's Hideaway. It's like last week I went to a show at 15th Street Tavern.
Oh, my God. I didn't say the Toad, at least.
Yeah, right. The Toad's still going. Herman's is still going.
They are.
Yeah.
What we have used, the way that we felt comfortable using Patreon is we basically said, okay, it is not realistic for us to tour 6 months out of the year.
No.
You know, we have a guy who up until recently lived in Chicago, and he's going to be moving back there again here in a couple months, and, you know, I just had my first kid last week.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Our drummer's got two kids. We're all married, you know, dudes in our 30s, and it's just not realistic for us to be full-time gigging, but we love to do this more than anything in the world. So a couple of years ago, I started really trying to think of ways that we could, you know, I mentioned I worked for the Nug Nation and Burn TV.
Correct.
So I've gotten the experience of seeing media from a content distribution perspective, and I really started to get this idea of like, okay, how can I best serve our handful of people that really actually listen to us? You know, we don't have thousands of fans around the world, but we have
followers.
We have a handful of really involved, really engaged followers. So I say, okay, instead of focusing on meeting the right people, let's focus on serving the people who are right in front of us. Let's focus on entertaining the people that are right in front of us and making cool shit for them. And I, especially with the way, you know, you're not selling albums anymore.
No.
Bands are like
songs.
The songs and shows. Hits, and pretty much you've got to count on just giving your music away.
Yeah.
You know, you can say everything you want about platforms like Spotify and Apple Music and how the bands aren't getting a fair shake. But I would much rather have my stuff on those platforms and have people be able to access it than not at all. I'm willing to take the hit.
See, and it's funny, because I remember, again, back in my day, I remember, like, the biggest complaint most bands had was everyone's in it. If they don't love it for the music and the performing and giving stuff to the fans, we don't want them in the band. Well, and now, because of your love and giving the fans what they want, you're doing the wrong thing by putting it on Patreon? I mean, it just seems like a double standard, and they just don't understand it.
We haven't faced any direct criticism about it, but I think that there is a hesitancy for, we'll say, bands in our category and in our quote-unquote scene to be involved with it. There was a big controversy a few years ago about Allegiant, the metal band Allegiant, started a Patreon campaign, and the language that they used in their campaign, where they basically said if they didn't fund it, they were going to quit.
Okay.
Like, they came at it a way where they were trying to be tongue-in-cheek and kind of funny, and a lot of the metal media outlets picked it up. And the most popular thing you can do now, and the way that you're going to get clicks on your website, is by slagging people.
Of course.
So pretty much they got ripped apart in the space, and a lot of articles, a lot of op-ed pieces got written about, like, you know, why crowdfunding is dying in the music world, and why you're, you know, stop begging and go play some gigs. And so there was kind of a stigma associated.
Wow, okay.
But we have, in the past few years, started running our band much more like a content channel. You know, we have our the Evergroove Live series, and we try to be as prolific as we can writing-wise. We do our weekly podcast, and I had this idea to kind of expand the band into more of a conceptual project, and I conceived of, I think I mentioned it before we got on the air, I was a big fan of Ralph Bakshi and Wizards. I'm so stoked he's going to be at Dink. I was a big fan of Heavy Metal, the movie and the comics.
When that first came out, I mean, that was just like, wow.
It blows your mind.
It does.
You know, I'm really into Prophet and, you know, the Walking Dead and anything Alan Moore puts his hands on. You know, I love Promethea and, God, what was Watchmen and all that stuff.
And Watchmen getting their own TV series now.
Oh, yeah. So cool.
I mean, I think it's going to be interesting, but I don't know if, I mean, as good as Alan Moore is, and as much as he had the foresight to write that, I don't know how well that's going to translate into a weekly series. American Gods is struggling, in my opinion.
Yeah. Is it? I haven't watched it yet.
But I could see the same thing happening because of how tight-knit Moore's story is with Watchmen.
Well, can you imagine someone tried to make Sandman into a series?
No, there's no way.
Dude, Sandman goes into places that they could not possibly wrap up in a 1 hour episode.
No,
the thing about Watchmen is that it's designed specifically to be a comic book. It is right. as much a comic book about comic books as it is. About
well, now to
in it, you know.
To that point, one of the things that we're doing with the book, The Front Lines of Good Times, that Jake and I are working on, is we do it as an episodic. But we do it as a motion comic, much like the way that that Watchmen has been done. So to give you some background, some context, when we first started doing this, it was an idea that I was working on with Joshua Finley. I don't know if you're familiar with his work. Josh is incredible. He's an amazing artist. He's also super busy. He's also super busy, and his illustration style is not a comic illustrator style.
No.
You know what I mean? He is very into large format pieces that take a lot of time and a lot of detail. He draws everything in triplicate. Like, he's amazing.
He's dedicated.
But the first book took us over a year to put out, and he drew each panel as a full-scale drawing individually and then scanned it and shrank it down into panels. There's only 100 copies of it out there, so it's very hard to find, but the first episodic that we did with Josh is online. And it got to the point where I just had to sit down with Josh and go, listen, man, this isn't what I imagined for the project. I had originally imagined a monthly or bi-monthly series, you know, just like basically we would write the songs that would be the soundtrack and do all the voiceovers, and it would be something that people could follow in between us being able to do gigs and do tours and stuff like that to keep people engaged and to just make cool shit. Because making cool shit is fun. And he totally understood. Josh and I are great friends. He's still, you know, we have him do our posters and our T-shirts because that's where he really excels, is in doing those large-scale pieces. So I happened to get introduced to Jake after our second illustrator pulled out of the project because it was just too much for him. He didn't want to draw characters that somebody else had done the original character creation for. He didn't want to surrender creative control to me as far as writing the story. So we lost this guy. Jake happened to be hanging around Streets of London. I had seen his book, This is Heavy Metal. Didn't know it was him. I actually thought it was related to heavy metal comics.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was like a small like one-off that they did, like indie comic series that they did. And Logan, our bass player who works at Streets, happened to talk to Jake and you know, knew him from Hail Satan and all this stuff, and happened to mention that we were looking for an artist. And Jake jumped right on top of it, and his style of drawing is much more congruent with what I had originally set out to do,
how you want to tell the story.
I wanted to make a sci-fi rock and roll comic. I wanted to make a rockalyptic, you know, dark comedy series that people could get into. I wanted to make something that was fun and funny and entertaining and promoted the band and showcased our music, but also conveyed some themes and some messages that maybe we couldn't do by just hitting you over the head with it in a song lyric.
No. And I think what you guys are on to is where the industry is going to go. The attention span of people is getting more and more finite as the days pass.
Oh yeah.
And they want quick bursts, they want binge-worthy TV, they want it all as quickly as they can, but they want it quickly.
Well, and they've only got so much bandwidth for it.
Exactly.
So what we think of it is in like this. We think of our total following, and then we think of the 10 to 20% of those people are the people who are actually what I would call like live followers, like the people who actually know what we're up to, actually come to shows once in a while, actually listen to the music. And then we have this 1 to 2% that are the people who go to every show, buy every record we put out, buy every shirt.
The loyalists.
The loyalists. in the law of diffusion of innovation, you know, they're the early adopters. They're the people that wait online to get plasma TVs, even though the technology is substandard. You know, they're the people who wait for the new iPod as soon as it comes out, or wait for the new iPhone.
Yeah.
They're those people. And we really seek to make stuff specifically for them. Even to get to a much more detailed level, we have one guy that we make stuff for. We have our number one fan is this guy named Joey Klontz. Joey, I know you're going to listen to this because I'm going to send you a link to it. But our buddy Joey Klontz, who's going to be at Dink, you'll get to meet him.
Excellent.
He comes to all our shows, buys everything. He plays our music for his kids. We make everything we make for that guy.
And you know what? There's nothing, because that's your demographic. I mean, that's your niche. That's your. I mean, one of my fellow podcasters, they have a Patreon account, and their number one fan that pays, he comes and sets up their gear now.
Oh yeah,
he still pays.
Oh yeah,
but now he's like the roadie. He comes and set everything up for him. He just wants to be there. He's 100% into it. And I love those kind of fans. We've got them too, but I haven't been able to do anything impulsive enough to get a Patreon account that it's like every month I'm sharing it with everybody. So there's nothing exclusive.
We had original. Now this is the two important things on that.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, we did it where we were only going to do it on the per release basis instead of monthly. And because it was taking us so long to get the comic out, we had no capital to keep us going.
Ah.
So a couple of our patrons actually said, guys, we just want to help you.
Right.
You should switch to the per month. And so we put out a message and we said, we're going to switch to per month. If you want to pull out, we understand. If you want to reduce it, now's the time to do it. We understand. It did not drop as much as you might have thought it did.
Really?
You know, a lot of people just reduced their amount. And when we have interviewed people, because we've had them on our podcast, we've talked to them in person about it and said, what do you like most about being a patron?
Mm-hmm.
And the response I almost always get is, getting the stuff early is pretty cool, but mostly it's just really cool to help you guys out. Mostly it's really cool to just be part of it. And I really do, I back 14 or 15 creators on Patreon for small amounts, but I look at it as if I were a religious man, I would go pay tithing.
It's your tithing.
Well, I pay tithing to
the Church of
Creativity. You know, I kick down money, and it comes directly out of what we get from our patrons, so it's our cut. And we take a 10% off the top, and we spread it around. because we believe in other people, and we believe in that platform, and we know it has made us able to pay our studio bills and pay Jake every once in a while when, you know, like, he does incredible work, man.
No, he's amazing.
And because he should get paid for it.
He should. And I'm surprised he hasn't gotten picked up by somebody by now.
Well, what we're hoping, our big hope is that, you know, our label in Europe promotes this comic, and we're really putting forth an aggressive campaign on the new book, the first book that Jake's done. The second book that Jake did is going to be out soon, and the motion comic, we do all the voices.
What are the challenges of a motion comic? Because I watch the commercials for like the X-Men motion comic, or you know, it's starting to catch on, especially DC. DC's been abusing the shit out of this for a while now, and it's starting to gather more steam, and I'm curious, I mean, how labor intensive is
this? It's extremely labor intensive.
Yeah, it's a lot.
The big thing, the hardest thing is collaborating all the moving pieces, because we have. So here's how it works. I write the story.
Right.
Jake and I sit down and we do a breakdown. Jake draws the comic. What we've done in the past is then me and the band go into the studio and we record all the voiceovers. Then that studio producer, Alex Tyler, who is the producer of the motion comic audio, we do all the music at Evergroove up in Evergreen.
Right.
Fantastic studio. But we do all... we do all the stuff for the motion comic either at Nug Nation Studios, where we do our podcast, or with Alex Tyler in a smaller studio. And then we take all of that stuff that once it's done, and we turn it over to an animator. Our new animator, Macy Little, is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You're in for a treat when the new motion comic comes out. He's doing some really fantastic stuff.
Very, very good.
So good. And what we're finding is there's a huge learning curve with figuring out which order those pieces need to be created.
Right.
I think next time around we'll probably record the audio to the comic, because getting the pacing right is challenging. You know, I have a vision in my head when I type it.
Right.
And then it goes to Jake and it goes through his filters, which, by the way, he's been totally amazing at taking my ideas and illustrating them.
Right.
Like, he has required very little direction. We're very synced up in that way.
When I got this job, it occurred to me that I was the right person to have this job.
You're absolutely the right person for this.
It was serendipity.
You know, and I would love it. Really, the major challenge is financing to... Because everybody involved with this obviously loves it, but has mm-hmm. to work a job.
Of course.
You know, and the studio's got to get paid. And
yeah,
the band
above
guys
all else,
have
the studio,
to get away
from the
their
studio's the one. That's
the studio's got to get paid. Jake would love to get paid. I mean, you wish in one hand, shit in the other. We'll see which one fills up first. But, you know, Macy would love... But the thing is, people... are committed, but things start to slow down if you don't have those resources to
quickly
to make it a priority for mm-hmm. them. You know, so that's a major challenge. As far as making the stuff, though,
yeah,
that's
the easy part.
That's the easy part. I have the entire 36 chapters planned out in my head. You know, I've written rough drafts of the whole first book, the first eight.
Yeah.
And I know where I want it to go. And I'd say the hardest part, like old Tom Petty said, man, it's the waiting.
The waiting.
It's like sitting here with this vision and this idea. At the same time, it creates a delay so that ideas have a chance to fully ripen and mature. You know, there are ideas.
Comics.
Yeah.
A long time to make, and, gives you plenty of time to make sure that you're doing the right thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a little gestation period.
Of course, by the time that we're done with this next one, like by the time we are done with this one, it'll have been, I want to say, 3 years since the project was originally conceived of.
Oh, so you can do, like, a previously on.
Yeah. And people will be like, what?
We're
going to
speed that up.
No, let's work it up.
And we already are speeding it up. Like, Jake was turning out pages to me every week.
Mm-hmm.
Josh was so busy, it would be like
he got backlogged.
Months would go by. And then he'd be like, let's get together and talk about these pages. I'm like, what do you mean get together and talk about these pages, dude? Like,
you've had them.
Yeah. And Jake would be more like, let's get together and go over the breakdown. Okay, next day, I'm seeing not panels, not sketches, pages done.
Completed
inked,
pages
ready to
done.
Go.
Damn.
And with Macy, it's like he gets a hold of those pages and runs them through his magical process, and bam, I've got 10, 15 seconds of video with the audio synced up, and it's like we get really excited about it.
Yeah.
Of course, then by the time it finally gets released, the person who's watching it hasn't invested that time in it, so they go, oh, that's
okay,
pretty neat.
That's cool.
Well, that is, there's a thing about comics in general. I remember after I finished my first book, this is when I was in college, it's like 40 pages, something like that. But, you know, drawing 40 pages, as far as I was young, I was in my early 20s, and I had put a lot of time and energy into that, and watching, and I know this is an experience lots of cartoonists have had. Watching people read your first book is
oh, you can't do that.
A devastating experience.
Yeah, you can't do that.
All cartoonists.
Yes. Well, that applies to all art in general,
yeah,
man.
Yes, right.
You put out yes. You put out an album that you've been working forever on, and then send it out to get reviewed.
Oh, that's a bad idea.
And then people, you know, at least if someone hates it, you feel kind of good because you got an emotional response for it.
I like
them.
When people dislike the things that I.
Oh man, but when you get back a dozen lukewarm reviews mm-hmm. that where people are just like, nah,
that's fine.
It's pretty standard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. Nice guys, bad band.
Yeah.
They have a good sound.
No,
they remind me of
it
this.
It reminds
band.
Me of this.
For sure.
Let me compartmentalize everything that these guys have devoted their entire life to and summarize it in a few keystrokes.
You just walk away decimated.
Because I'm such an expert. I'm such an expert on art and music.
A lot of times, dude, will be like some fucking from some like blog or something. Like,
dude,
Well, and most of the bloggers nowadays, even if it is good, they can't justify mm-mm. liking it.
No,
it's got to be an attack.
They'll lose their job if they like it.
Exactly,
they will lose their job if they like it.
You can't like it.
And so I am like, there is a part of me that is really afraid of this book and this series getting any kind of notoriety.
Mm.
I almost would much rather it just make 20 people happy than be successful.
You've got one guy for sure.
Yeah. I got one guy for sure. Simply because I know that throwing shade on people is a sport now.
It is.
In internet culture. And it's really a drag, man, because I would much rather talk about how cool things are.
Absolutely.
You know, when I see a movie that I like and I want to talk about how awesome it is, and then the next day, like, Bird Box came out and everybody just had to trash Bird Box, or the Dirt, or Lords of Chaos, or, you know, even Infinity War, which was amazing, you know. People had to, meh.
Yeah, even like Black Panther. They're like, seriously?
What? That horror movie is amazing. Yeah, I saw that too.
I was just like, no, he's doing a great job. Let him, just leave him be.
Like, it didn't, I'm a big fan of this concept of responsibility for value.
Yeah.
Who is ultimately responsible for getting value out of any situation? You know, if you go to a movie and the movie sucks, whose fault is that? You can go see a total bag of shit movie and make the decision to have a good time.
Yes.
I try to get a shitty movie in once every 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
It's fun. It's enjoyment.
Are you kidding? Amazon Prime's got the old 80s films. I go back and watch some of those and just laugh.
What do you say about the old 80s movies?
Oh, some of them. Man, they wouldn't even make it on Sci-Fi these days.
Do you follow Wisecrack?
Mm-mm.
Okay, Wisecrack is my favorite YouTube channel. They do philosophical deep dives on different forms of media.
Right.
And they did a deep dive on the concept of a bad film.
Mm-hmm.
Bad film, one word. And they talk about The Room and, you know, just like a bunch of movies that, like, what makes them so appealing is how bad they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what makes them so enjoyable is that they're almost some sort of social commentary because... It's just some lunatic's vision that they put out into the world.
Yeah, I mean, Mystery Science Theater made seasons out of it. Elvira set the groundwork for all of that. I mean, there is a need, but it's somebody's vision that they, again, bled, sweat, and, you know, died to produce this entertainment for at least one fan.
I mean, what if every movie that ever came out was perfect?
It's really good, yeah, right?
I mean, no one thinks Attack of the Killer Tomatoes is a good film, but you
wait
watch
a
it,
minute, buddy.
But you somebody watch it anyway.
Somebody thinks.
Somebody
that.
Out there thinks.
Hey,
that,
listen, there are people out there for whom Gigi Allen is their favorite band. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are people out there that are like,
hey, I know.
I love Gigi Allen. I love Anal Cunt, man. They're my favorite band in the world.
I know people that are still broken up over Wham not being together anymore. I mean, you have
Wham not being together anymore.
I mean, you have those things. So,
yeah.
I mean, you love what you love, and you love what you don't love. It's
well, and when you create stuff and you have a different kind of. You have this, like, agape love for your creations.
Absolutely.
Because it's, like, it's almost like I mentioned, I just had a child last week, so I'm very much in this, like, you know, it's become a big theme of a lot of the connections that I'm making in my art and whatnot.
You're becoming paternal, is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, becoming very paternal. But there's this idea of, like, even when your kids are screwing up, and even if your kids went on a clock tower and shot a bunch of people, you'd still love them, you know what I mean?
That's my baby, yeah.
And it hurts you to hear people tear them apart, and hurt. It's like, if I create something, even if I know... Like, first of all, I can't enjoy it on the same level as anyone else because I participated with its creation. Oh, yeah. But then to see it go out in the world and for someone to feel lukewarm or to trash it or to treat it with some sort of disdain or completely disregard it altogether, to have it make almost zero impact.
That's the one that is the worst, I think.
Oh, when it's just like nothing.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You're like,
Like, you listen to it and it's like, man, this was hard for me to even put into the world. Mm-hmm. And the fact that no one cares just is all the more, like, just confirms what I was suspicious of. And then you go into that spiral, the boozy shame spiral. And
in those cases, and a perfect example is Wizards. Wizards is ahead of its time.
Oh, yeah.
When Wizards was made, nobody understood what the fuck they were watching.
Ralph Bakshi was...
he was
on some next level shit.
Yes, and I
it was
honestly
low budget.
Think it was well budgeted, yeah. And I honestly think there are times in the creative process that you get, again, with the motion comics, with the, everything that you got going on, you're ahead of the curve. You're doing before anybody else has had a chance to catch up, to think about it, and yes, they may meh, but at the same point, I think you're ahead of the curve. You're groundbreaking, and you're bringing it to the front, and other people will build, whether they give you credit or not, they're going to build off of what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, there are bands, you know, like Magic Sword did a comic. Mm-hmm. You know, the Magic Sword comic is badass. There, you know, our old guitar player, Tay Hamilton, who's now in the Hot Apostles, shout out to that dude, really great guy. He used to have this collection of rock and roll comics. You know, you remember rock and roll comics?
I actually have a complete run.
He had almost all of them, had them up on his wall everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I just liked that. I liked that idea of creating something that your fan base can sink their teeth into. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a time when I kind of romanticized being just the t-shirt and jeans guy on stage, just playing your songs and nothing. You know, I mean, I come from the punk rock world. I was into that. But fact of the matter is that people, like, my favorite band of all time is Ween. Hands down. It's my favorite band of all time.
Push the daisies up. I love that.
I love being able to sink my teeth into their mythology and their catalog, and
no song being the same.
Yeah.
Ween are awesome.
Yeah.
But like,
I don't like that the hippies think that they can just fucking have them.
Do you know what? But I gotta say, as much as people, like diehard Ween fans, talk shit about that, it does make the shows more interesting that there's such a wide swath of people at those shows.
Sure. Yeah.
You go when I went to the
also with like Dean Ween did that on purpose. Like that's this isn't like that. He sold himself to them, not vice versa.
Well,
they latched on to him. I mean, to be fair, it's like
Fish
all of a sudden,
covered a song, and then
and that was it.
Right. Yeah, and they joked about that. They're like, all these stinky hippies are coming to our shows now, but
and
they fucking love.
And more hippies came after they made fun of them. They're like,
yeah.
Oh, they love us. Okay, and,
yeah,
we're
into it.
We're in.
But when you go to a show, it's like you've got the like old school like '90s fans. You've got the nerds. You've got the metalheads and punk rockers. You've got tons of hippies. You've got all the like just like EDM party kids. You've got such a wide swath of people that are at those shows, and everyone there is part of the joke.
Yeah,
everyone there is in on it.
Yeah,
and I love that idea of I would much rather have a handful of people that would get in a fight with someone in a bar for disparaging our name than be the most popular band on the earth.
Yeah.
You know, now that might just be what I tell myself to be comfortable with the fact that, like,
you're in the middle of Colorado.
That we're in the middle of Colorado with, you know, 25 podcast listeners a week and, you know, 300 copies of our vinyl records sold over the course of 3 years. You know, maybe that's what I try to do to ease the sting on that. But I really do like that. I like the idea of having something that a few people really get and the rest of people either don't even notice it or don't pay attention or kind of just, cast it aside.
So in addition to the comic, which you guys will probably, who says probably, you'll be on the podcast when we broadcast from Dink, but you also are going to be performing.
You're
bringing the band in.
Yeah, both of our bands are going to be playing.
Really? Hail Satan's going to be there too?
Hail Satan's there. Hail Satan's playing Saturday at 5, and then MF Ruckus is playing at 2 on Sunday. Which is, man, I've been talking to the LaGrecas about trying to play at Dink for a couple years now.
Right.
And, you know, I remember talking to Jeff about it last year, and he was just kind of like, I don't know if we're really there yet to be able to do it the way we want to, but we'll see. And this year it ended up working out where I think you set it up, didn't you? Got us in.
Well, they had the bands last year, and I mean, they weren't bad. I mean, we were in the beer garden. They were okay. A couple of them was like, okay, we're going outside to hit the food trucks.
Battle Pussy's really good.
They actually hit the cheap seats. I do agree with that.
Yeah.
No, they're a great band.
Yeah.
Suzanne's rad, man. Mm-hmm. One of my other bands got to play the Comic-Con after party with...
Rock Comic-Con?
Yeah, with H2 Awesome.
Oh, really?
Oh,
yeah,
see?
Yeah, White Fudge played with H2 Awesome at...
at that show, for sure.
It was so fun, man.
Yeah, at the Armory? Right?
It was... No, it was...
Hard Rock?
It was at 16th Street Mall. At
yeah, that's a Hard Rock.
At the Hard Rock,
okay,
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It was so fun, man.
Actually, I did see you there then, because I was there those years for covering it and all of that. That's
yeah,
right.
Man. Yeah, wow. White Fudge played that. That was fun. I don't know how we got on it. I think it was like... I think Jim Norris probably hooked us up with Daenerys and the Targaryens, and you know, ever since then, Jeff and Suzanne and
Jeff's wife, she's so talented.
They're so fucking cool, man. Yeah, so I've been really wanting to do this for a while, and you know, obviously I am not like as diehard as some of the most diehard comic book nerds are, but. I've loved comics all my life, you know. I've loved kind of, I don't know, alt culture, animation and cartoons. And
it's
movies
always
and
been there. It's gotten so much spotlight now.
Well, because of the accessibility.
Yes.
And people, I love that we're living in an age of fans,
mm-hmm.
where it's just like you can be a fairly prolific creator and be a fan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like...
Okay, that's the way to do it.
It's like, these are all the things I'm a fan of. These are all the things I'm a fan of. Let's find the cross-section of where everybody is fans of things.
It's like a part of networking as particularly a cartoonist.
Well, it's a part of our language.
Well, yes, it's invaded the language. It has taken its life of its own, and that's how people communicate.
You look at the term, the concept of a meme.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The original concept of meme is like a sociological term. Is just like a self-replicating packet of information that moves throughout a society. And now we live in a time where literally there are little squares, little infographs, little pictures with text on them that move throughout the internet and communicate ideas that just stick into people's brains.
Yeah, in fact, my brother asked me the other day, what's with the Ant-Man up Thanos' ass meme? And I'm like, you know what? I don't know.
And then you can Google it, and you can look it up, and there's a whole community of people explaining jokes.
I remember specifically earlier this year, Powerful Shaggy, that just being like, perplexing.
Yeah.
How the fuck? This is just such an obscure idea. How is it that everybody in the fucking world is talking about this absurd thing right now?
You know, and it's so enormous and infinite. That, like, I remember, like, there are many times, and I'm sure you've experienced this, Jake, where... And I'm sure you've experienced it as well, Smurf. Just like, it can be overwhelming and disheartening to see the sheer volume, the infinite volume of creators and content that are out there and feel like my stuff doesn't mean anything. And it's like, of course your stuff doesn't mean anything, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's like we're all part of this like huge ecosystem of art where like your thing inspires this guy, which inspires this guy, which inspires this guy, and we help each other out. And you have your handful of things that this guy's never heard of that you can introduce him to, and he can be like, oh, have you heard of this handful of things? And art, as a result, develops at such an incredible rate that it's like we can't even conceive of what it will be in a week.
Well, and that's the funny thing. You're screaming into the dark, essentially. Mm-hmm. You're screaming in the dark, and you don't know what's going to hit. You don't know what's going to catch. Because sometimes I'll post something. I'll do something like, oh, this is it. Crickets, you know? And then that one weird softball, you know, across the plate, and it's a home run. Everybody's talking
about
it.
We shared a Spider-Man meme that outperformed everything we've ever done in our entire career.
I remember having a conversation with David Castillo. This is you know, he'd had David and company, you know, he had a couple bands that he liked. You know, they were really serious. They were like his passion projects and things. And then he started Pizza Time as a joke, right? It's called Pizza Time. He was like, here's a funny thing. And then Pizza Time was, by a huge margin, like more successful than anything he'd ever done. And his response was like, well, here's the universe playing a very weird joke.
Yeah. You never know.
I also feel like being nobody is the most freeing position that you can be in. Because when you are nothing, there is literally nothing stopping you. when you have nothing, there is nothing to lose. When you are nobody, nobody cares what you do, so you might as well do whatever
what
the fuck you want, man. And when you think like that and you stop filtering yourself as like, how can I fit into this scene's little box and how can I appeal to these people? It's more like, who are the people that already like what I do? Mm-hmm. How can I make them smile? And then maybe if they get really into it, they'll talk about it to some other people, and that little bit of joy will spread out to someone else.
Well, and when I was in radio, I had one piece of advice from the guy that did the bumpers and all of that, and his word was, not all of them are Oscars. Don't change because you feel you have to. Change because it's a natural progression.
Right.
And he's like, they're listening for you. They're listening for what you're doing. They're on the same journey that you are. Mm-hmm. Other people are going to jump in and jump out, of course. You always have attrition. However, you are still you. Don't change that. And I've lived by that.
There's a motto. Group of people that only you can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a group of people that only Jake can talk to. And there's a group of people that only I can talk
yeah.
to. You know, there's It's really fascinating how it works out this way. Mm-hmm. How it's like,
I'm not for everybody. Yeah. I get it.
I'm
not for you.
But we're stronger. Also, we are stronger as a team.
Absolutely.
Everybody's got those. You know, there's something that everybody brings to the table.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm ticklish. So
who the fuck wants to be famous? You look at someone like,
I just want the paycheck.
You look at someone no. You look at someone like Led Zeppelin or the Beatles, and at a certain point it becomes fashionable for people to go, you know what? That band is overrated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like
those
the Beatles.
I like
there.
Beatles.
I said it.
There I said it.
You get to a certain, or you write a song that is so amazing. You write a song like Stairway to Heaven, right?
Right.
Which is so amazing that it gets picked up by radio and run into the ground and ends up annoying people to where I've actually heard people say, ugh, I hate Stairway to Heaven. Really?
Mm-hmm.
You hate?
You,
dude, it's like,
where did
it's
it
like,
all go wrong? How
that's like saying,
so dead inside?
That's like saying, ugh, I hate the Sistine Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like saying, like, ugh, I hate the Blue Lagoon. You know what I mean? Not the movie.
No, thank you.
The actual Blue Lagoon in Iceland.
It's funny because I think Steven Tyler's gotten to that point where he clowns on himself now.
Because mm-hmm.
he's gotten to that point of infamy that who doesn't know
well,
who
he's
he
a
is.
Meme.
He is a meme. He is a living, walking meme.
He's been memeified and yep. his
he's embraced it.
His personality, the entirety of his identity has been flattened out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I just watched Mommy Dearest for the first time. I'd never seen it before.
Really? Wow. Great film.
I'd never seen it.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great film if you look at it from one
the time
perspective.
Period.
But if you look at it from I read an interview with Faye Dunaway where she was like, I really regret doing that part because it basically took Joan Crawford's entire life and flattened it out into a caricature.
Yeah.
And that's what we do to these people is we, you know, you look at, like, Samuel L. Jackson is a really good example of this. Like, Samuel L. Jackson has been in a bunch of films.
Mm-hmm.
He's a brilliant, like, a Renaissance man.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, his
character... I watch Coming to America once a year.
Yeah, yeah. His character in Pulp Fiction and all the motherfuckers and this and mm-hmm. that and the other, people began to memeify that. And then they made Snakes on a Plane based on this caricature of him. You know, that character was...
Like Nicolas Cage is another example.
Oh, Nicolas Cage is a great Vampire's Kiss.
In Mandy, did you see it?
Oh, in Mandy. I haven't seen Mandy yet, but Vampire's Kiss is another one they
mm-hmm.
reference a lot.
He's hilarious.
I've never even seen Vampire's Kiss.
No?
And I am aware of it
wow.
because of how he... Because the internet has memeified him mm-hmm. and flattened him out. Into a caricature.
Well, you know what I also think? Nicolas Cage, here's a hot take. One of the great American actors.
He is one of the great American actors. He's big on absurdism and...
he's a total comic nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So.
I'm sure this is not true, but I had heard that he did those Ghost Rider movies for free because he fucking loves Ghost Rider so much.
Not too far from the truth, but he didn't get paid what he could have.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
He didn't get paid what he was worth.
Yes.
Because nobody could possibly pay Nicolas Cage what he's worth because he's priceless.
Wow. Okay, moving on. So the tweets the Instagram? How do people need to follow you so that they can see the latest installment and everything else that's coming up?
The best place that you can go to find our stuff is just go to mfruckus.com. Right when you get onto our website, there is a link to click to go and get access to a PDF and purchase a printed version of The Front Lines of Good Times Chapter 2, written by me and illustrated by Jake Fairley. You can also find all our music, links to our podcast, the motherfucking podcast, which we do every week. It's on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. We're also on Instagram, at MF Ruckus. We're on Facebook, Facebook/ MF Ruckus Band. We're on Twitter at MF Ruckus The Band. Sorry about that. Let's see.
Well, I'm not surprised that one wasn't taken. Yeah, just a regular MF Ruckus.
Yeah. And of course we're on Spotify. We're gonna be on Pandora soon, I hope. Nice. We're on Uber, Lyft. Let's see, Grubhub. You can order us on Grubhub.
There's a surprise.
you can have Postmates come to our house. And pick us up.
Nice.
Take us
I like
to
that.
Your house. We're on Waze. We're on Waze. We're on, you know, we're on all the stuff. Just find us. Just come join the party. Have fun. And definitely check out Jake's stuff. This Is Heavy Metal is, like, dude, I saw that and I was like,
it's so intense.
When
I
saw
love
that,
it. It's amazing.
When I saw This Is Heavy Metal on the shelf, it was when Josh and I first started working on the book, and I was like, I need to show this to Josh because this is what I want to do.
Don't you have it over at Vision? Didn't I see it over at Vision Comic and Oddities? Don't you have it over there? Yeah, because when I saw it there, I was just like, oh, fuck. You always have a little sense of pride when you see somebody else's work on the shelf.
And we're gonna be hanging. We're gonna be hanging at your
Dink.
Booth.
Yeah,
so at Dink.
We're gonna be on the third floor. We are at table 382.
Yep, 382. You will be right next to us because we are at table 355. We'll be podcasting.
We should try. Hey, would you like to be the guest on our podcast?
I would love
recorded
to.
On your equipment.
I would. I would love that.
Cool. I mean, just make sure you send us the audio files, and then we'll put them on.
Just bring. Like letting someone play your Halo controller. Yes, that is exactly like someone letting them play with your Halo controller. Why are you bug-eyeing me right now? Jesus.
Because there's no camera.
I know there isn't. Well, you know what? I'll bring you. We'll get you a little thumb drive. We'll download the audio file.
That'd
so
be
you
great.
Can walk away with it.
That'd be great.
Like that.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Are you going to have any ash cans or anything available art-wise, book-wise, upcoming for the project?
Well, the new book will be available there.
Yep.
We're going to have merch there and a couple of, you know, we'll have CDs for sale. Unfortunately, we're totally out of vinyl.
Damn it.
But we will.
Because I would have totally taken up for a vinyl.
Yeah, we're sold out of vinyl. We did it. We did a limited run with our German record label on 80 gram vinyl, and they went really fast. It like
not
took
surprised.
2 years to sell them. So, you know, like.
Well, they just blew out, didn't
light
they?
Light speed. Yeah, but we'll be there selling a little bit of merch, and we'll have the Front Lines of Good Times Volume 2 with the entire thanks list.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Alrighty, guys. I will let you get out of here. It's getting late. You have stuff to do.
I have
we
band
have a
practice.
Podcast to get done because in the end, we're all stories. So make it a good one.